Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. Welcome everyone. Nice to see you all here. It's my first time to Sri Lanka, and what I've seen so far has been very nice, very pleasant. It's very good to come to a country, one of the first countries where Buddhism started off after India. It's a great privilege to be here, and it's very, very nice to be here actually. And especially when you come from a country like Australia, where Buddhism is very new, and people look at you and they look at you with strange eyes, wondering what you're up to. It's very nice to come to a place where people actually understand who you are, and straight away there's an understanding there. It's actually very nice. So I'll just get on with the talk for today. I'm going to start today and talk a little bit about just basic meditation practice to start the retreat off. And then this afternoon I'm going to continue with talking about the suttas more specifically, but this morning mostly about meditation practice. So first of all, who is it? Many people here who are beginners to meditation, who are, or maybe not beginners, but maybe fairly recently come to meditation practice? Everybody's quite, one over there, okay, good, okay. I might do, after this talk, I might do a little bit of guided meditation just to get people kind of going in the meditation practice. So that is the plan for today, and the overall plan for this retreat is essentially to integrate the word of the Buddha with meditation practice. And one of the things that I've always found, which is very interesting here, is that when you ask people who the teacher is, who the meditation teacher is, who the Dhamma teacher is, they will say things like Mahasi Sayadaw or Paok Sayadaw or Bhante Gunaratana. They might say people like in the Thai Forest tradition, might say Ajahn Brahm, who's my own teacher. They might say anybody here. But there's one person they never mention as a teacher, and that is the Buddha. And that is very interesting, isn't it? Because the Buddha is like the root teacher without whom none of us would actually be here. We all depend on the Buddha as the kind of last resort for our practice, and yet we never mention the Buddha as our teacher. And the fact is that if you start reading the suttas, you start reading the word of the Buddha, you find very quickly that he actually gave lots of very detailed information about obviously all aspects of the path, but also specifically about meditation practice. And it is these things about meditation practice in the suttas that I want to try to bring out during this retreat. I think this is actually very important, and it's underemphasized in contemporary society, and probably has been underemphasized for a very long time. Because in the end, you may have a teacher, you have a lot of faith in her, but how do you actually judge at the end of the day whether this teacher is a good teacher or not? And there's only one kind of golden standard by which all teachers, all people, anybody should be measured against, and that golden standard is, of course, the word of the Buddha. There's no other standard really to use. So if you want to find out whether your teacher is okay, you have to look and see what he says actually agrees with what the Buddha said. And it's surprising, when you open the suttas, many people think, oh, the suttas is too difficult, I can't read the suttas, it is too hard, it's too complex. But what you find when you read the suttas is that it speaks to you almost immediately. There's a direct understanding of what the Buddha taught right there. It's not that complicated. And of course, if you want to understand them very deeply, then it takes time. It takes, you have to read them again and again. But there is information in the sutta that you can gather straight away by reading the suttas even the very first time. So these suttas aren't that complicated. They aren't that difficult. And over time, as you mature in your own practice, as you mature in your reading of the suttas, you grasp more and more profound levels of the suttas. And this is one of the things that I want to also to bring out on this retreat, the different layers of meaning in some of these suttas. And then, when you start to grasp the meaning, then you can ask yourself, my personal teacher is Ajahn Brahm, who I'm sure some of you will know about probably. I always ask myself, is what he teaches, does it accord with the suttas? Because Ajahn Brahm has his own style. Is what he says, does it make sense? Should I just accept what he says without thinking for myself? And of course not. That would be the wrong way. And Ajahn Brahm will be the first person to say that your refuge in the end should really be in the word of the Buddha and not in what I say. This is where your true refuge is. That's where you should go back to. That's where everything else should be measured against. So this doesn't mean that I'm not trying to sort of to say Ajahn Brahm is a bad teacher or anything at all like that at all. What I'm saying is that you can only know when you measure against the word of the Buddha. So that is kind of the outline of what I have in mind for this retreat, word of the Buddha and meditation. And what you will find is that when you are quite peaceful and your mind is at ease and at rest, then you will find that the ability to understand the word of the Buddha also increases. And then when you understand the word of the Buddha, then you find that that actually improves your ability in meditation. The two go very, very beautifully together. And hopefully this will actually then prove beneficial for both your practice and also the understanding of what the Buddha was saying in the sutta. So hopefully it will kind of build each other up. But first of all, today it is going to be an introductory talk to meditation practice, and I'm not going to talk too much from the suttas today. I'm just going to give a very kind of basic introduction to meditation practice. And one of the things about meditation practice, which I have always felt is very important to keep in mind, and that is to remember always the big picture in meditation. Sometimes when we meditate, we think that, oh, I must do anapanasati, I must watch the feelings in the body, I must do a mantra, I must do metta bhavana, loving kindness meditation. And we have this idea of what meditation is about. We think this is the method. And then when we sit onto the seat, we sort of grasp onto the breath and we hold onto this object. And very often, because we think this is what meditation means, we actually miss the real purpose of meditation practice. Sometimes we get tense. Sometimes we feel uncomfortable. We can't really relax properly. Or we become dull or whatever, because we actually grasp on to the meditation object in the wrong way. So this is not really what meditation is. Meditation is not a method. Meditation is a means to get somewhere. It is a, you know, we're trying to actually achieve something, right? And what we are trying to achieve in particular is, one way of looking at it, is peace, right? We're trying to become more peaceful. This is one of the things. So the way that you know whether you are doing the right thing, whether you are practicing the right meditation object, whether you are doing the right area of the Noble Eightfold Path, whatever it is, the way you know that is by asking yourself, is it giving the results that meditation practice should be giving? So don't grasp onto the object, don't grasp onto any particular technique. Remember, it's about getting more peaceful. It's about becoming more joyous. It's about becoming more calm, more relaxed, more at ease, all these kind of things. If that is happening, then you're practicing in the right way. And this is very important to remember, so we don't have too rigid ideas of what this path is all about. Now the first thing, I'm going to start with the very basic things. The first thing that we need to do to find the peace, to find the ease, to find the relaxedness, is to actually know how to deal with the physical body. So meditation practice essentially is a practice of how to develop the mind, right? So the body doesn't really have any purpose in the meditation practice. Maybe, you know, on some levels of insight it has a bit of purpose, but the preliminary calming meditation, the body doesn't really have any purpose. So what we want to do in meditation is essentially to put the body aside, leave the body aside completely. This is what we're trying to do. Now, to be able to put the body aside, there is only one way of doing that. And this, again, is according straight from the suttas. And that way of doing that is the middle way. And I'm sure you all know already what the middle way is, right? This is the very first teaching of the Buddha. It's fascinating. If you read the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the first teaching of the Buddha, the first thing he says is, after saying, like, bhikkhave, monk, the first thing he says, there is this middle way, right? The Majjhima Patipada. This is the first thing. Before he talks about the Noble Eightfold Path, before he talks about the Four Noble Truths, the middle way is the first one. And still, despite this being the very first teaching of the Buddha, and therefore obviously must be quite important, he wouldn't kind of emphasize it so much if it wasn't important. Despite the fact that it is the first teaching of the Buddha, it's so common for people to forget about the middle way. It's so easy to do all kind of silly, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, silly meditation practices which are not the middle way, not practicing, not going down that path which actually leads to peace and calm and all these good states of mind. So we need to find the middle way. And of course, on the one hand of the middle way, on the one extreme, the one anta, as it says in the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, translated as extreme usually in English, the one extreme is the indulgence in sensual pleasures, right? Now, on a retreat like this, where everybody's keeping the eight precepts, it's very hard to indulge too much. It's very difficult. So you don't have to worry too much about that side of things. It's the other side, which is much more dangerous, in my opinion. And just to give you an example of how dangerous it can be, some years ago I was teaching in Singapore, and I lived with this man in his house. And after a few days, he came up to me and he said, "Can I please ask you a question?" And I said, "Of course." And he said to me that, you know, a couple of years ago, I went on this meditation retreat in Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia. And it was so terrible. It was so much pain, so much discomfort. I felt so tight and so uncomfortable that I never ever in my whole life do I want to go on a meditation retreat again. And I said to this man, "But, you know, not all meditation retreats are the same. Some are more relaxed, some are more, you know, tough, some are more rigid. It varies, depends on the teacher. You know, why don't you try to, you know, try another type of meditation instead?" And he said, "No, that's it, I've had it. I don't want to do any more meditation, because meditation retreats rather, because that was such a bad experience." And it is my understanding and my experience that if you look around, the vast majority of people who come on meditation retreats, particularly the first timers, they don't ever come back again, because it is too unpleasant, it's too harsh, it is too strict. And what is happening there is that people tend to veer towards the atta kilamatanu yoga, the mortification, the tormenting, the torture of the physical body, or also sometimes the torture of the mind, when you become very tense and very uptight and very ill at ease. So we have to be careful with that. And it's a fascinating thing I find. Why is it that people tend to be so, to think that this tormenting is a good thing? What is actually going on there? And, you know, if you look around the world and you look at the different religions, you look, of course, at Hinduism and the Brahmanical religion in India, and of course we all know that they are into tormenting the body sometimes. You read at the time of the Buddha in India, there were all these people tormenting the body. If you go to India today, you find the same thing here. So things haven't changed that much. So that happens in India. You go to Christianity, and you find that in Christianity there were people who were into, you know, self-flagellation, beating themselves and all these kinds of things. And apparently if you go to Islam, apparently you find the same kind of things. But the worst thing, and this is what is the worst thing of all, and that is that you find it also in Buddhism. In Buddhism, where we have a teaching that specifically says we shouldn't do this kind of thing. So be careful. It seems to be something very deep in the human psyche, across cultures, across centuries, across wherever you go, very deep inside of us, that seems to think that if we torment the body, then we are somehow on the right track. And of course, it is a misunderstanding. But it's important to remember that, because it's very easy to go down that wrong way. And sometimes I do it myself. I find myself just having, you know, forcing too much, using too much pressure, actually having too many pains to really be able to get anywhere. It's so easy to go down there. And perhaps the reason why this happens is because we know that sensual pleasures is the wrong way. So perhaps we think that by tormenting the body, we're somehow cancelling out the pleasures, right? A bit of torment, a bit of pain, will kind of cancel out the, you know, the pleasures of the body. Or perhaps we want to punish the body, because the body is kind of the source of desires and all these kind of things. So, but whatever the reason is, we have to be very careful not to go down that path. So when you sit in your meditation, I'm very glad to see that people are using chairs. That's a good sign. I recommend you, if you find it difficult to sit on the floor, if you find that you get too much pain, and I think most modern people find it quite hard to sit on the floor. We have grown up sitting on chairs. So please don't feel embarrassed or feel that you have to sit on the floor. Sitting on chairs is perfectly okay. If you want to sit on the floor, it's okay to lean against the wall sometimes if you find that you're getting a bit tense. So just to relax a bit more, that's perfectly fine. Some of the best meditators around, they often start by leaning against the wall when they begin the meditation practice. I know Ajahn Brahm, he always tells me that when he is in his QT and he's feeling a bit tired because he's been working very hard and been talking to lots of people or whatever, he always starts off by sitting back and leaning against the wall. Just allowing himself to relax, right? Allowing the body to find a sense of ease, to actually calm down. And then, when the body relaxes, and when you start to calm down, and you find a sense of clarity inside, then you will feel the right time to straighten your body up, right? And no longer lean against the wall. It comes by itself. In other words, you know the right time for these things pretty much automatically, because now the clarity is there. You don't want to lean back anymore, and then the meditation proper can begin. So it's important to know the stages, know where you're at, know what you need. Don't just follow a forced program, a forced idea of what right meditation is regarding posture or anything else. So please use the facilities, use the chairs, use the walls, use whatever is there to make sure the body is comfortable. Not too much pain, ideally no pain at all, but that's of course impossible with the body. There's always going to be a little bit of pain, but not so much pain that the mind always goes back to the body, seeing the pain all the time. If the mind goes back to the body, to the pain, you know it's too much, you can't deal with it. And then you find that beautiful balance, that beautiful middle way. And why is that so beautiful? Because you find that if you are not indulging in sensuality, if you don't have pain in the body, then what happens is that the body becomes irrelevant, right? What's the relevance of the body if there's no pleasure to be had? It doesn't matter anymore, right? I don't care about the body, no pleasure to be had through the body. If there's no pain that you have to sort out, again, what's the relevance of the body? The body is largely irrelevant. And that is when the body starts to fade away. The body starts to disappear because it is irrelevant. So that, you can see, that is the middle way. The middle way where the body disappears, the body doesn't matter anymore. You feel at ease, you feel relaxed, you feel comfortable without indulging yourself. Just at ease and nice. So that is the first stage of meditation, just knowing how to deal with the body in the right way. Finding that middle way. And beware of that throughout this retreat. Make sure that you find the ease all the time and don't torture yourself too much. Then, when the body, you find the middle way with the body, the next thing to do is to find the middle way with the mind. Because even though the body may be relaxed, the mind may still be moving about, be restless, it may be tired, there may be desires in the mind, you may be thinking about, you know, back home, what you should be doing, and all these kind of things. I guarantee you, it's going to happen during these 6 days, that you're going to be thinking about, oh, what am I going to do back home, what have I been doing, and you think, oh no, I must not think like that, and you try to beat yourself up because you're thinking about the wrong things. And of course it's going to happen, because this is the nature of the mind. These are your attachments that are back there. It's very hard not to do that. Even monks do these things, let alone lay people. This is just the way the mind works. So this is then where the problem of the mind is. We have to find the middle way of the mind. And what is that middle way of the mind? The middle way of the mind, again, is you can think of the mind as having desires which are like if you want to call it desires, call it positive desires, perhaps. It's not really positive, it's the wrong word, but ordinary desires, right? When there's something which is nice, and you desire something which is nice, can be called a positive desire in a sense. And then you have the negative desires. The negative desires are when you have aversion towards something, something you don't like, right? Or you can think of it as the middle way between restlessness and sloth and torpor, where the mind is clearer. So the idea is to find that middle way where you don't have the aversion, the negative craving, nor do you have the positive craving. There's no craving at all. There's the middle way between the two. And that middle way between the two is one way, at least, of looking at the middle way of the mind in meditation practice. So how do you get there? How do you get to that point where the mind doesn't have any craving, neither positive craving or negative craving, nor the restlessness, nor the sloth and torpor, but in between? And the way to get there, first of all, is to make sure that you spend the first day or two on this retreat and just relax and take it slowly, and allow yourself to settle down, allow the memories from the ordinary life, the ordinary things that we have to deal with, allow those to fade into the background. And often it takes a while for that to happen, because it is very strongly conditioned into us, all the things, you know, from our past. So you have to give yourself enough time to allow the mind to settle down. Allow yourself to get enough sleep so that you can relax and you can take it easy, and you can feel at ease. And after a couple of days, having made sure that you have slept enough, don't be a slave to the schedule, for example. I apologize, Venerable Bhante Metta-Vihari, if I'm saying something I shouldn't be saying, but I think don't be a slave to the schedule, but do what you need to do, right? Look into your own heart. What do I actually require to be able to get a clear mind? So if you have tiredness, make sure that you have that extra little bit of sleep to clarify your mind. Not too much sleep. If you get too much, you also feel tired and dull, right? But that beautiful middle way. And then allow yourself just to settle down. You will see the restlessness, the agitation from a busy life starting to calm down over time. And after a couple of days, you will start to feel like a slightly different person. If you do it skillfully, you will feel like a different person after a couple of days. So this is the first method. The first way is just to allow things to settle down, allow things to be peaceful, allow yourself to be at ease, allow yourself to function properly. And remember that there is no competition here. You're not trying to compete with the person sitting next to you who can sit the most hours. You're not trying to compete who can have the best meditation posture. What you really are competing with is your defilements, right? What we're competing, we're not really competing. What we're trying to do is just to become peaceful. So you have to look inside of yourself to know what is right, not at anybody else. So just look at yourself. Don't feel that some of people think they lose face if they don't kind of sit enough hours. It doesn't work like that. That's completely irrelevant. We have to just do things because it is what works for us. And then you will be on the right path. So that is the first way. Just make sure that you allow things to settle down. And the second way, to give stability to the mind, take the mind away from craving, from restlessness, from sloth and torpor. And that is to bring joy into the mind. And this joy that you bring into the mind is a very different type of joy from the ordinary joys of ordinary life. This is the joy called the Niramisa Sukha in the Pali, or it can be called Piti or Panmoja perhaps. There's different Pali words. And the way, one of the best ways of giving rise to this happiness is often it just happens by itself. As you relax, and as you sit back, and as you enjoy yourself, then one day you find, oh, what a blissful thing this is. How relaxing this is, how nice this is. How wonderful it is to have so many beautiful friends and kalyanamittas on this retreat. And you just feel happy because of that. You start to feel happiness. And that kind of happiness you have when you are contemplating the beauty of your kalyanamittas, when you're contemplating the beauty of the peace around you, that is Niramisa Sukha. It is not the happiness that has to do with the senses. It's a happiness that comes from appreciation of spiritual qualities. Right? That is one way. Another way, which is often mentioned in the suttas, is when you slightly direct your mind to your own virtue, to your own sila. And you reflect that I've been living with the five precepts for such a long time. Or if you're a monk that have been living with the Patimokkha sila for a long time. I've been doing all these good things in my life, all these nice things. And you sit back and you don't use much willpower or force. You just allow these things to come back in your mind. And when you reflect like that, when you feel the goodness of your own heart inside, It's a very beautiful feeling here. It's a very nice feeling here. And you know that that too is the Niramisa Sukha, the spiritual happiness that comes from these things. And then you have the Chaga Nusati, the recollection of your own generosity. It's the same thing again. Whatever goodness you have done in the past, and you allow that to come in your mind. And then you find a happiness which is very different from the type of happiness that you get in ordinary life. Why is it different? What is the difference between this happiness and ordinary happiness? And I recommend you to reflect on that. This is one of the most important things to reflect on in any kind of spiritual life, to understand the difference between the spiritual happiness and the worldly happiness. Because when you understand that, that is when you stand to understand the power of this path, the purpose of this path, why we are practicing this path in the first place. So what is the difference? And what you will find is that the happiness of ordinary life, it is often the type of happiness that has a lot to do with craving. You crave for things, you go out there, you get the things, the object of your craving. And very often, because it is involved with craving, there's a lot of restlessness, there's agitation. It's not a peaceful, really, kind of search. Not a peaceful kind of happiness. And then you get the object of your craving, whatever it is. And often, it is quite disappointing. Okay, it's fun for maybe, for a while. You get your new car, and it's great fun for a short while. And after a while, you think, so what? I've been craving for this, this beautiful car, or this beautiful house, or, a new girlfriend, or whatever it is. And after a while, it isn't so exciting anymore. It becomes flat. And then you need something more, right? Craving arises again. And because you're following this path of craving, sometimes that craving is even more powerful the next time around. Craving builds on craving. And there's always this running after something in the future. You're never really content here and now. Always something in the future. Conjoined with this restlessness and agitation inside. Not really being content. Not feeling fulfilled. Not feeling complete. Feeling as if something is always missing inside, right? Running around forever. But that is the problem with craving. It doesn't feel, if you look at it, it doesn't feel complete. It doesn't really feel a sense of fulfillment inside. Now if you look, if you compare that instead, and you look at the Niramisa Sukha, the Sukha that comes from a good heart, comes from generosity, and comes from meditation practice, when you start to calm down and you get happiness in meditation, what does that feel like? And it's very different, because that happiness, because you're focusing on not a craving for the future or a craving for the past or something you want to get rid of, what you're focusing on is a quality inside of yourself, the quality of a good heart, the quality of a generous person, and that is here, is in the present moment. There's no agitation, there's no restlessness with it, there's a sense of peace that comes with that, and you feel a sense of fulfillment inside, you feel a sense of completion. Now watch that, contemplate that, look at that, because this is what the spiritual path is really all about. The sense of feeling fulfilled, the sense of being complete inside. Understand that. That will give you a very powerful impetus in your practice, because you will start to see the point of all these things that we're doing on the Buddhist path. And of course, that is just the beginning of that sense of completion. As you practice the path more and more, that sense of being fulfilled, that sense of peace inside, the sense of being in the present moment, not being restless, not being agitated, all this becomes more and more profound as you go along. So the first time you feel that sense of Niramisa Sukha, you can extrapolate, you can sort of look into the future. No, this is only the beginning. It's going to get much, much better as I go down the path. Much, much better. We're talking about massive amounts of better here. Really, really enormous amounts of better. So it's a long, long path down there. And when you think of that, you think, wow, this is such a profound and beautiful teaching that I have come across in my life. What a great fortune to come across such a wonderful teaching. So this is then how gradually, you move your mind in the right direction towards this beautiful sense of fulfillment and completeness inside. Okay, so that is my basic meditation instruction. I'm not going to say very much more today, I think, on meditation practice. You are, of course, welcome to ask me during this meditation retreat. I think, is there going to be a box so people can write questions and things?
Yeah, we have question and answers in the evening from 7 to 8.
Okay, and that people can write down questions and things?
And they give it to us.
Okay. Okay, very good, yeah. So there will be a chance to ask more questions about anything of what I say during this talk, so please take the opportunity to do so, and then we can answer those questions then. But that is basically my instruction for meditation. I'm going to reinforce this by giving a guided meditation which is based on the same principles. And I should also say that when this happens, you know, when you get this happiness in the mind, you get the Niramisa Sukha happening inside, usually that is when you know it's a very good time to move towards the meditation object. Once you feel a sense of pamoja, gladness inside, because that's when your mind becomes automatically drawn into the present moment. The mindfulness is there, the sati is there, and that is when meditation, like anapanasati, metta bhavana, all these things really become possible at that point. I'm not going to go much beyond that at this moment, because this is only the first day of the retreat, so we need to sort of start very carefully and very slowly, I think. So let us do just a little bit of meditation together, perhaps. If you don't want to take part in the guided meditation, please, there's no compulsion at all, of course. But if you would like to take part, you're most welcome. Okay, so just start off by sitting nice and comfortably. Maybe sit for about half an hour or so, just for now, or we can sit longer, but the guided meditation probably lasts for about 20 minutes, half an hour. And close your eyes. And the first thing to do after you close your eyes is always just to feel the body, and just to make sure that the body is at ease and relaxed, and certainly that you have no pains at the beginning, and you're feeling nice and comfortable where you're sitting here. And the next thing to do is just to make sure that you have no tension anywhere. Sometimes when people come from very busy lives, they can accumulate tension in the stomach, for example, or in the shoulders or in the face. So the first thing to do is to make sure that you let go of all those tensions. So take a few deep breaths, allow all the muscles to expand. And then when the muscles expand, that's when you breathe out, the tension can all disappear. And if you feel that your shoulders are tense, then again just breathe deeply, allow your shoulders to expand. And as it expands, and then when you breathe out, it all relaxes nicely. And anywhere in the body where you feel tightness or you feel pain, the muscles are sore or whatever, just send your attention to that area and just gently kind of massage that area and wish that area well. Thank you, body, thank you, muscle, for looking after me all this time. Now I will look after you. May you be well, may you be happy, may you be relaxed and at ease. And please continue like this on the body. Continue going through the body, the various parts, the various areas, until you know that the body is completely relaxed. Don't do anything else. Don't try to do any other meditation until the body is completely 100% at ease. And when you find that the body is at ease, the next thing to do is to allow the mind to fall to peace and become easeful. And the way to do that at this stage is just allowing the mind to be, not to do anything, not to direct it anywhere, but just allowing it to be here, allowing it to settle down by itself, without force, without willpower, and just stand back, just as if you are a passenger or somebody just watching the show. You just stand back, and just allow everything to be. At this point in the retreat, in the meditation, there's nothing right or wrong in the meditation practice. There's no need to judge anything. At this point, just allow anything to be. If you feel tired, it's okay. If you feel restless, that's fine. If you think about various kind of things, that is no problem. Just allow things to be. Just sit back and just watch things as they happen. No judgment, no right, no wrong. And as you find yourself gradually standing back and just watching phenomena rising, watching things coming and going, just notice in between that at times you become peaceful, and just watch the delight and the beauty of that peace when it arises inside. How wonderful it is not to think, not to do anything, just to feel peaceful, just to feel the sense of quiet around you. What a wonderful thing that is. And focus on that, and when you focus on that, it will start to grow inside of you. And as you find yourself gradually standing back and just watching phenomena rising, watching things coming and going, just notice in between that at times you become peaceful, and just watch the delight and the beauty of that peace when it arises inside. How wonderful it is not to think, not to do anything, just to feel peaceful, just to feel the sense of quiet around you. What a wonderful thing that is. and focus on that, and when you focus on that, it will start to grow inside of you. Just feel how nice it is not to have any duties or burdens or anything you have to do. All you have to do is to just to be, nothing else. Nothing in the whole world that takes your attention away. All you have to do is be here. What a wonderful thing that is. What a beautiful thing that is. Just get some joy out of the fact that all you have to do is to be here. Okay, so that is the end of the guided meditation. So just please continue practicing in whichever way you like it.